Hello, and welcome to America First. I'm Scotty Nell Hughes. Now, we're tracking an issue that affects every single American family every day. Gasoline prices. Now, whether you're commuting to work, running a small business, transporting goods, or simply living or trying to take your family on vacation, the price at the pump impacts nearly every aspect of the American economy. And lately, you know, Americans have been asking a simple question. Why is gas so expensive? The answer? Another question. Is it because of the conflict in the Middle East? Is Iran really threatening global oil supplies? Or are oil companies taking advantage of uncertainty and geopolitical fear? And the real question people want to ask, is Washington responsible for energy policies that discourage domestic production? You know, for years, Americans were told energy independence would protect us from foreign turmoil. Yet every time tensions rise overseas, prices at home seem to rise as well. Americans often hear politicians take credit when gas prices fall and assign blame when they rise. And the truth is, it's a little bit more complicated. Gasoline prices are influenced by a combination of factors: global oil production, refinery capacity, federal regulations, state taxes, supply chain speculation, international conflict, and consumer demand. But perhaps the most frustrating reality for Americans is that despite being one of the world's largest energy producers, we still feel vulnerable to events happening thousands of miles away. A missile launch in the Middle East, a disruption in shipping lanes, an announcement from OPEC, and suddenly prices begin climbing at gas stations in Tennessee, Texas, Florida, and California. You know, supporters of aggressive domestic energy production, well, they argue that America should never be vulnerable to foreign conflicts. Critics argue that oil is traded globally, making complete insulation impossible. Meanwhile, though, oil companies, well, they report these enormous profits during periods of instability, leading some Americans to actually wonder whether market forces are really driving the prices or whether corporations are just taking advantage of fear. We're separating politics from economics and finding out who really controls what Americans are paying at the pump. So we're going to ask, are oil companies manipulating prices during geopolitical crises? Does the Iranian conflict justify current price spikes? And how much influence does the White House actually have over gas prices? Why do Americans feel energy independence one year and vulnerable the next? And is our biggest problem energy policy or dependence on global markets altogether? Well, I know exactly who I want to ask. And joining me now is Professor of Economics, Dr. Richard Wolff, and Dr. Ike Hammer, who is an economist and publisher. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen, on this very, very important situation, which, by the way, it was only supposed to last a few weeks. And yet here we are, months later, and even the most conservatives are starting to say, this is really hitting my budget, President Trump. You've got to do something about it. So let's start with the accusation most Americans make every time prices rise. Oil companies, they still report billions in profits, while consumers are paying more at the pump. So I'm going to start with you on this, Dr. Wolff. Are oil companies genuinely responding to market conditions, or are they using geopolitical uncertainty to justify these higher prices?
Well, I appreciate that you ask it either or. But I'm afraid I may frustrate you and the viewers by having to tell you that it's both. Let's remember what an oil company is. It's a capitalist corporation whose goal is to make money, or if you like it, maximize their profits, or however you want to argue it. That's their job. They see every geopolitical event as simply a changing set of circumstances into which to then pursue the maximum profit. So, for example, if the United States and Israel attack Iran, which they did, and Iran responds by closing the Strait of Hormuz, which was open before the United States and Israel attacked, and then you have supply problems, and we have supply problems from time to time for many reasons. Well, now the oil companies say, gee, how can we use this? And you're absolutely right. On top of whatever the extra cost of oil because of the strait being closed, they will see if the opportunity arises to jack up the profits using fear, using anxiety, using the ups and downs of our president's policies on Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. Whatever's available, they will use. Unless we had access to the books of these oil companies, which we don't have, we can never know what the combination is of genuine increase in cost and profit-driven jacking up beyond that.
Richard, normally I am against government interfering in business, especially a small business, but any type of business. I like less government regulations. However, in this case, I do think there's a lot of manipulation that is happening. Where is the transparency on that? I want to bring you into this conversation, Ike, because whenever tensions increase, like he said, involving Iran, the oil markets react almost immediately. How much do you see of today? Now, he gave us in general, but today's gasoline prices can legitimately be tied to this instability that is happening in the Middle East.
Well, I think it is indeed mainly tied to this instability, because in the oil market, we always talk of the decisive quantities that are provided to the market or that are missing in the market. And when you take off 20% of a special or special qualities of oil from the Gulf region, then it has impact. Some refineries need these special quantities. You are tied to special contracts from the supply, from the oil well to the refinery and so on. So this causes disruptions, but it's also clear that energy companies use this special situation to do it. But in this case, I would say it's mainly this cause. Even though that the governments are already intervening, they have thrown oil from the strategic reserves onto the market like never before in history. And this should really drop the market, but it can't. They miscalculated the entire situation in politics. They really thought, it's my belief at least, that this they can overthrow Iran very quickly, and the Strait of Hormuz is opened quickly again, and not too much damage has been caused to the oil facilities in the Gulf region. But the opposite happened. We already know that the damage that already has happened to the oil facilities in the Gulf region is so severe that we cannot open these quantities fully in the next 12 months at least. So whenever this these fights are over, you can start of trying to see what has been damaged. It takes about 3 to 6 months, in my point of view, to get the damage really listed. And then you have to repair this. So you have to, and the repair takes at least 6 months to repair these facilities. So what we are facing now is, especially in Europe, we have a real oil shortage. And the Europeans, of course, they try to get the oil afterwards everywhere on the world. They go to America, they go to every source they can reach out to. The Venezuelans didn't increase their production quick enough, as we thought after the Maduro left the country. And this is, in my point of view, exactly the source why we have these increasing prices and why they will probably increase much, much more.
That's the thing. You know, I look at this, Richard, I go to Ike's point. It's not just the United States. It's Europe. It's all around the world. They're seeing not only a shortage, but the scarcity is causing prices to rocket. Do you not think President Trump realized that once there were bombs, whether they were from manned or through drones, were going across in the Middle East, that it was going to impact the oil, and that he should have been better prepared for this? Do you not think he put this into his, this might be a possibility and how we handle it?
Well, I don't want to comment right away about my president's behavior. It's very difficult to understand and even more difficult to justify. He does seem to be winging it most of the time. And so I assume he winged it here as well and didn't think through the consequences. But I would like to remind people, if I could, Somebody blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. Had there been oil and gas flowing from Russia the way it had for decades before, you know, no disrespect to my German friends, but the Wirtschaftswunder had a reason, and it was cheap energy from Russia that was a large part of that story. That was a deliberate governmental activity. A few people in a boat didn't do that, and if they, anyway, I won't go into it, but between the Ukraine war, cutting off the trade, and the pipeline, which is an act of violence, you put Europe in a position that has now led to the deindustrialization of the whole area in a way that will remove Europe from the center of the world in a way it hasn't been for 500 years. We're watching that process. And in that, the oil manipulations become a relatively small story. In addition to releasing oil from the reserves, we should be aware that some countries in the world have been able to isolate themselves from this process. Let me give you an example, because it's very important. The People's Republic of China is dependent on importing oil. It doesn't have enough oil under its own soil. So it took an interesting step. When oil prices were cheap, it developed reserves underground, like they are here in the United States, but it's much larger, and they filled it with cheap oil, so that they are now in a position to use the cheap oil to help them get through a period which otherwise could have been devastating for them. I mean, so there are ways of managing this. And finally, even if you don't do this and you allow the prices to go up, in some parts of the world, including Europe, they are basically saying, we're going to take some tax money and help average consumers pay for their bills. And you know where the tax money comes from, in part? From those big oil companies' record profits. If we had what's called an excess profits tax here in America, which we used to have, we could tax these companies, use some of the money they're getting, and help others face those higher prices, so it's not just a profit gain for the oil companies.
Well, that would definitely make that administration very unpopular, or the oil companies with the oil companies, but maybe that's what needed. I've always wondered why the federal government has not stepped in and said, we're going to reduce the federal gas tax. The state's stepping in. Some states have tried. No state has really gotten away with actually reducing the gas tax to help the consumers. But Ike, real quick, we've got about 30 seconds left on this. Do the Europeans realize the consequences? That they could have not, they could have actually been in a better situation right now if things like the Nord Stream pipeline weren't destroyed, that they were relying a little bit too much on everybody else to make decisions that ultimately impacted them.
No, they don't. The media painted a different picture in Europe, and unfortunately, most people are believing this. But many, many people are waking up. More people are waking up, and they see that we were screwed. We were, on the one hand, screwed by those who cut off the energy supply from Russia, which is not only those who blew up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, but also the European Parliament. And secondly, we used to have long-term contracts in European Union so that these price spikes, like we see it now, wouldn't have affected us. We had 10-year contracts normally, and so these spike hikes wouldn't have been affected the ordinary person on the street, especially if it's just short term. But the European Union, in preparation for what we are seeing now, has deliberately canceled this. And I cannot get rid of the impression that these politicians deliberately wanted this crisis to happen, especially regarding that they were agreeing on these terms in Davos and trying to get rid of fossil fuels out of the economy. But it doesn't work, especially not if you have no answer on what you want to replace it with. And we have nothing to replace it with, so it's just a model to destruct, to sabotage the industry, and nothing to build up with. And this is the sad thing about it.
Richard Icke, stay with me right there. And you bring up so many good points that at the side. But the good news is, I would think the people, I mean, you can only pay so much of the gas pump before you start realizing that there needs to be change made in the government. So if anything, let's hope that this might be waking up some of those voters for the future. Icke, Richard, stay right there with me, because when we come back, we're going to discuss whether America's biggest vulnerability is bad policy, or is it participation in a global energy marketplace that no nation can truly escape. And we'll ask whether Americans should expect relief anytime soon. More when America First returns. Welcome back to America First. We're discussing who is really responsible for high gasoline prices and whether America can ever truly control its energy future. Joining me back again are Professor of Economics Richard Wolff and Dr. Icke Hammer, who is an economist and publisher. Thank you so much for joining me. Before we left, we were starting to talk about Europe, because I think Americans somehow obviously think that it's just happening to them, but it's not. This is a global situation that's happening, all because of what is going on in the Middle East. How much oil, does this mean that Americans, do you think, will always be vulnerable? Do you think Europeans will always be vulnerable? Or I asked before we left, do you think the voters within your area are waking up to realize that they were put in a situation that they could have avoided?
Yes, I think they will, because more and more free media is arising. Of course, the state-subsidized media tries to suppress everything that is the reality, but the free media is rising. So people are fed up with what these politicians do. You have uprisings all over Europe. You now had, of course, it was the reason with the football game in Paris, but this anger that is in the citizens is just exploding. And it doesn't matter what reason is just called out, but it's going. You have alternative parties, apart from those who were in power until now, who are rising, who are skyrocketing. You even had in Hungary, like a party that arose out of nothing and was able to be elected. So people want a change. They don't want the policy as it was anymore. And they don't want this so-called green energy destruction whatsoever, Green New Deal, whatever they call it. They don't want this. They want to work hard in Europe, especially in Germany. All they want is they want to have a job. They want to work hard. They want to honestly make a decent living, and they don't want to be pushed for ideological things. They don't want to be sucked out. I mean, especially in Germany, we are the highest taxed people in all the world. There is no other country that plunders its people as much as the German and the European bureaucracy plunders the German people. And all they want is get some freedom, get individual freedom, and let us do our jobs and let us have a chance on the world markets. And if you take into consideration, first they made the regulations in Europe harder than everywhere. Then they canceled our most important markets. It is the entire eastern part of the Eurasian continent. It's basically blocked for Europeans because of sanctions, because of the one has apparently no democracy or has democracy. I don't know. The reason is all the same. They just blocked it. Then they sabotaged now. Then they made the highest wages or the wage costs in the world. In Germany, we have the highest cost for labor in the entire world. And we only have labor to make our fortune, to make prosperity. We don't have raw materials in vast amounts and so on. And this is now the last nail in the coffin, the energy. The energy was the last possibility to slightly have a chance to compete on the world markets. And this is what they destroyed now too. I can't help it, but I see a red line that is followed. And even if people thought they could sabotage the German economy, the industrial German economy, to make it move over to America, it doesn't work. It neglects all the principles of small business economics. They say you cannot just transfer a private, a small and medium-sized business. You cannot, because the people are not being transferred. You can transfer capital and you can transfer tech industries, but not the small businesses.
And you were right, Ike, and I hear the frustration in your voice, and you're right, that red line might be there. You are starting to see the protests definitely arise in Europe, especially around Germany. That's what I have to ask you. Dr. Wolf, what is that red line in America? Do you think at some point that Americans could be pushed for? I mean, let's remember in the 1970s, underneath President Carter, we did have a gas crisis that caused a major political change, both in spending as well as politically. What is that red line in Americans that Americans will finally say is enough, enough, all of you politicians, we need change?
I think it's happening here, too. Differently in each country with the cultural and historical differences. It's going to be different in Germany than it is even in France next door, let alone here in the United States. But I believe it is happening here, too. Every poll that I read, and I read them all, indicates that the majority of Americans are unhappy with the Republican Party and unhappy with the Democratic Party and unhappy with being torn between the one and the other, feeling that in the main, there isn't all that much difference. And when there is a difference, like with Trump, it's more in the performance than in the underlying reality of what's going on. I think the appetite for change here is enormous. I would remind people that back in 2018, when Mr. Macron raised the price of the gas on diesel in France, you had the greatest uprising of the mass of people in modern history, called the Yellow Vest Movement in France. You don't know about it, read about it. It will be something that will make you stop and take a deep breath. Could we have that in the United States? Absolutely. Let me give you an example. I'm talking to you from downtown Manhattan in New York City. That's our biggest city. We just elected last November in an election a young man who nobody had ever heard of before, who stood up and said, "I am different. I will run the government with fundamental changes." The man identified himself, get ready, as a Muslim socialist, which is what he is. Mm-hmm. Zoran Mamdani. He won the primary of the Democratic Party, and then he won the general election by huge majorities. That's unthinkable. You know, if you had asked me a year ago, I live here in New York City, whether that would be possible, I would have thought you had drunk too much. It's unthinkable. Well, it isn't. It's our reality. And if we could make that change, and let me remind, by the way, those who might be interested, New York City has a larger Jewish population than any other American city. This is a mayor who was asked, "What would you do if Benjamin Netanyahu visited New York?" His answer, "I would have him arrested." Okay, the Jewish population voted for this young man also. So it is an extraordinary statement that the change you're asking about, and you're right to ask, is a lot closer than most people are willing to admit.
Well, and I can't, and tell me if I'm wrong in this, Dr. Wolf, when I look at why people voted in New York for that change that they're looking for, it's not necessarily that they agree with everything that Mamdani stands for. It's just that he was honest. He said, "This is how I'm going to rule. I am a Muslim socialist." That just being honest of what his policies were going to be. I might not agree with it, but at least I know what's coming. I'm not going to say that it was hidden from me or that you betrayed my trust. I know what New York's going to get. Inconsequences to be seen.
Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better myself. That's what got it. I'm for change. I'm not BSing you. I am telling you, if you don't want to change, I'm not your guy. If you do, I'm a way to do it. And the Republicans and Democrats are not. And the people of New York who are used to voting for Republicans and Democrats agreed with it.
Well, and that's what you're seeing right now. And I have to go back and say, it's not that the majority of people wanted socialism. They support the Socialist Party when they elected him. They just supported a politician telling him the truth, and you knew that he wasn't lying for it. And I think that is what I think those in elected office are missing on this issue. But I want to bring us back to what we're talking about, because obviously these gas prices are just atrocious. I'll get to you and say it real quick, Ike, but before I let Dr. Wolf go, I have to ask you, do you feel like Americans will always be vulnerable to foreign conflicts regardless of domestic production levels?
Yes.
Okay. There's no way around it.
We are talking, all three of us, We are talking at a time that there's a more internationalized economy than we have ever seen. The last 40 years, called, by the way, globalization, weren't called that for no reason. That's what happened. The profit-seeking corporations moved their operations to global. We lost enormous industry in this country. We have never gotten it back. They moved to China, to India, to Brazil, all over the world, creating these long supply chains. Yes, we are interdependent, and we're never going to undo that. That's part of the stage upon which our future will be built. So we better come to terms with our international vulnerabilities and work them out, because the attempt to hide them, to protect them with tariffs and trade wars and all the rest is a mistaken unwillingness. It's the same crude error that we used to assign to Luddites, the people in the early stages of industrialization who went and smashed the machines as if they could hold it back.
Thank you so much, Professor Richard Wolff and Dr. Ike Hammer, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You know, this conversation reminds us that there is rarely a simple answer when it comes to energy. You know, gas prices are influenced by economics, politics, foreign policy, corporate decisions, and global events. But Americans don't experience those factors as theories. They're experiencing them every time they pull into a gas station. The larger question isn't simply who is to blame. It's whether America can build a system that gives families greater stability and less vulnerability. Because regardless of political party, every American wants the same thing: affordable energy, reliable energy, and confidence that events happening halfway around the world won't suddenly wreck their household budget. The challenge for policymakers is figuring out how to achieve all three. Thank you for watching. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been America First.